This is Live and Local. I'm Kevin Kelly. The show is your connection to local music and more. On today's program, we have three segments that I especially enjoyed the first time around, so much so that I thought I'd share them with you again. The first two were live performances given in our studio, first by classical guitarist Angelo Favis, and then by a group of young Irish musicians who present a show called Celtic Crossroads. The third segment contains a conversation I was privileged to have with mezzo-soprano Frederica von Stada as she embarked on what she called her farewell tour. Angelo Favis is professor of guitar at Illinois State University in Normal. I first met Professor Favis when he brought his entire 17-member classical guitar ensemble to the WYLL studios in March of 2009. On January 19th of this year, he came by himself. He was giving a recital that weekend for the Springfield Classical Guitar Society and previewed several tunes for us live in our studio. We'll pick up partway into our conversation. Do most classical guitar students, or even most classical guitarists for that matter, do they tend to begin playing the classical guitar and that's an interest for them whenever they pick up the instrument? Or do at least some of them start, say, on rock guitar or other kinds of guitar and then morph into classical? Or does it? How does that work?
I think the most common experience is that they play other styles first, predominantly rock. And then from there, they gravitate towards classical, usually one or two ways. Where they've heard they've heard a recording, and they like it. Somebody playing classical. And so they look for a teacher. Or they go to a high school that has a guitar program that actually features some classical instruction.
Do you play other kinds of music besides classical on the guitar? Or have you?
Well, you can say pop music, or you know, I can strum chords. I've accompanied church and choirs. But I don't specifically, for example, play jazz. I like to listen to it, but I think it would take too much time to try and learn it. Well,
so you were one of those guitarists who got interested in the classical guitar from the beginning?
Actually, no. But I started out listening to Clapton, but never getting deeply into that style of music. You know, I would maybe try to get the melody by ear, and that's all I would play. And then I'd look up chord charts and just play along songs like John Denver and stuff like that. And then when I entered high school, I was a freshman in high school, I saw somebody playing classical guitar, and I said, I want to learn that.
Mm.
And from then on, after my first lesson, I knew this was what I was going
to do.
Yeah.
What would be our next preview piece of Saturday's recital?
Let's see. I can try some Bach.
Well, that doesn't sound very encouraging. I can try it.
Well, Bach is very difficult.
See if it actually
on
works.
Any instrument. So, and you know, we're on the radio, so it's kind of a bit of a challenge.
Yeah, okay. I was going to say you're 5 days out from the recital. I hope you're beyond trying it.
Oh, but at least you know I have to tune. So.
Oh, okay.
This is from a keyboard partita originally transcribed by David Tannenbaum, who was one of my teachers in San Francisco. And this is the prelude to the first keyboard partita.
Thank you.
Well, a few questions actually coming out of that experience just now. First, just even watching your fingers move, it looked much more difficult than either of the Brouwer pieces you played.
Oh, it's very difficult.
Much more complex. What makes Bach difficult in general? I mean, you said it seems to be in general difficult.
I don't know. I think it's just hard to play really well. Even some of the pieces that are, I think for like the keyboard teaching pieces that he wrote for his sons, they're actually quite difficult. They require an ease of playing that, you know, I think takes time to attain.
The earlier etudes of Brouwer, one of them was 2-note chords, and one was 4-note chords, and this one you really had your fingers were spread all over the place, like the one chord, you know. I've got my finger here spread about as wide as the two outside fingers can go, and that's looked like what you were doing a number of times in there.
Yes, and what makes this particular partita difficult is the fact that it was not originally written for the guitar. You know, it was written for the keyboard. And so,
where you've got 10 fingers.
10 fingers, yeah, this huge span. And so, you know, to approach transcription is another challenge. What notes do you take out? Or what notes do you keep in certain octaves? When do you change the octave because it's better for the instrument?
Do you amplify yourself in performance spaces if it's over a certain size?
Not if I'm playing solo. If I'm playing chamber music, I may. For example, if I play with, actually, and even in a small-sized hall, if I'm playing, for example, with string quartet, I need to be amplified.
At least just a touch.
Yes, just so you notice that, oh, there's actually sound coming out of the instrument.
And so this guy sitting there going through the motions.
Yeah.
And being drowned out by the other string players.
And then the other string players can then let go, too. They don't have to worry about kind of playing down.
Playing very soft.
Playing very softly, yeah. So as not to cover you.
What are we going to end with?
Well, I don't know. Would you like something Spanish or something Filipino?
Oh, you have something Filipino?
I do, actually.
I don't know if I know any Filipino composers.
This one that I am performing is Bayani de Leon. He comes from a family of gifted musicians. His father actually is a national artist in the Philippines, his late father. And his siblings are all either composers or performers in their own right. And he's living now in upstate New York. And I came across this piece from my very first teacher. He wrote it out for me. My very first teacher had photographic memory. And he wrote out the music for me. And then I lost it. Hmm. And I wanted to, after I had recorded my first CD, I wanted to include this piece on the second CD. Those CDs, by the way, are called Philippine Treasures, Volume 1 and Volume 2. And the music in them are what you call kundimans, or Filipino love songs, originally for voice and piano, and they're transcribed for guitar. But this piece I wanted to include, and so I contacted the composer. I had lent my score and never got it back.
It never came back. And you, alas, don't have photographic memory.
I don't, and I did remember parts of it, you know, but not all of it. And, of course, I didn't make a copy, foolish of me. Mm. And so I contacted the composer, and he said, okay, I'll take a look. And then he comes back and says, you know, I only have the first 3 or 4 pages. I don't have the complete one. Oh, okay. Cause, you know, I would like to record it. Let me think about it. And then about 2 days later, I get an email with an attachment. He just rewrote the last few pages.
So it may or may not have been like the original.
It's very close from what I remember. It's not exactly like it, but it's very close.
Well, now I'm intrigued. So can we hear it?
Sure. This is called the Variations on a Philippine Folk Song, Lulay, by Bayani De Leon.
Thank you.
heard guitarist Angelo Favis play variations by Bayani de Leon on a Filipino folk song called Lulay. Professor Favis played live in our studio back on the 19th of January to preview his recital that weekend for the Springfield Classical Guitar Society. I'm pleased to have had the chance to air that for you again. Coming up next, Celtic Crossroads, a touring show of traditional Irish music given a lively kick by its seven young musicians.
Anger management. It can be an issue for the young musicians who come on from the top. Thank goodness that the teenage pianist on the show this week has the piano. She claims it's the best anger management tool around. Join me, Christopher O'Reilly, to meet her and take in her great performance of the music of Prokofiev on NPR's From the Top this week.
Sunday afternoon at 1 on FM 90.9.
Programs on WILL are made possible by Columbia Street Roastery, roasting coffee daily at 24 East Columbia in Champaign. Also offering a variety of tea and chai. Open Monday through Friday from 9 a.m. to 5:15 p.m. and Saturday mornings from 9 to noon. More information is available at 352-9713.
Celtic Crossroads is the name of a road show that, according to its publicity material, set out to do for Irish music what Riverdance has done for Irish dance. The seven young musicians in the band drove to Urbana from Chicago early on the morning of March 25th, on their way to a performance that evening at Eastern Illinois University in Charleston. They spent an hour with us, chatting and playing live in our studio, beginning with a set of jigs.
Thank you.
Right, the seven members of the the show called Celtic Crossroads here on Live and Local on FM 90.9. And they are, flutist is Lindsay Moyna, banjo player Jonas Fromsire, fiddler and musical director Michael McClintock, guitarist is Johnny Barrel, accordion player Marianne Knight, and we'll hear her singing in a little while, Ilan Pipes, Isaac Alderson, right? And drummer Dermot Hurley. What is the, what is he, business manager, road manager, organizer, Kevin Crosby?
Kevin, yes.
Yeah, he was telling me a little bit about the deeper background of the idea of the crossroads.
Yeah, you might as well tell us about the crossroads,
yeah.
Oh, yeah,
that would have been a big tradition years ago. It actually came from, there was a time when kind of the Irish tradition was forbidden by the British that kind of came in, and their way of trying to fight back. Basically, the Irish culture was forbidden. You weren't allowed to speak the Irish language. You weren't allowed to play the Irish music. So their way of fighting back, they'd sneak out in the middle of the night or in the evening and go to a local meeting place, for example, a crossroads between two villages or something, and they'd just play and dance and jig away for the night. And then even when, like, it was no longer illegal to have the Irish culture, that kind of tradition stayed going and kind of turned into what we now know as the kind of Irish music session or so.
And how long ago did that change?
That would have been the 19th
century. 19th century, about 100 years ago.
Yeah, about 100 years ago.
And it's still alive 100 years later.
Yeah. Pretty much so.
To a degree. And you're picking up, I mean, you're not just doing Irish music, but you're also part of the Crossroads ideas. You're picking up music from quite a number of other
styles,
traditions, including American bluegrass.
Uh-huh. Yeah, a bit of bluegrass as well.
Is that why we have a banjo in the mix?
not really, actually, because the banjo was kind of incorporated into Irish music in the early 20s and 30s. In the States, it's an American instrument, as you know, but this version only has four strings and it's tuned like a violin or a mandolin.
So yeah, I was going to say, it looks different from what, it's shorter,
yeah,
also.
It's shorter and only has four strings and it's tuned in fifths for anybody musical out there. And so it's basically very handy to play all the fiddle tunes on. A lot of tunes are composed for fiddle. So
we're going to sing for you a song called Crooked Jack. And it's an old Irish, a working song about a man who left his homeland and started working in the mines. So for those of you who are crawling out of bed now and are experiencing a bit of pain in the old back, this one's for you, because Jack himself had a bad back, hence the reason he was called Crooked Jack.
Crooked, so here Jack.
Both young and stern, with adventures in your soul. There are better ways to spend your days than working down a hole. Well, I was talking to all the 6'2" when they broke me across the back. By the name unknown, and I stopped my home, yes, they call me Crooked Jack. Well, let me gang us, well, right, boy, he cried, every Jack he could do no wrong. And the reason simply was because he could work both hard and strong. I was talking to all the 6'2" when they broke me across that back. By the name unknown, it's not my home, just they call me Crooked Jack. Well, there were crisp the day I went away to work on the Hydro Downs. Our sweat and tears, our hopes and fears bound up in shuddering jams. I was talking to all the 6'2" when they broke me across that back. By the name unknown, and it's not my home, and they call me Crooked Jack. Well, I've never seen such men before, and their faces drawn and gray. Sure, I never thought so soon would mine be lying the self-same way. I was tall and true, 6'2", when they broke me across their back. By the name I'm known, and it's not my own, yes, they call me Crooked Jack. What don't they say that an honest work is tough, fire in the spirit and the soul? Don't believe me, boys, it's for sweat and blood, they want you down the road. I was down into all the 6'2", when they broke me across their back. By the name I'm known, and it's not my own, yes, they call me Crooked Jack. I was down into, and I was 4'2", they broke me across the back. By the name I'm known, and it's not my own. Oh, and they call me Crooked Jack.
Something like that. I thought I heard a little of bluegrass in that one, partly with the. I don't know if we picked up the vocal harmony in the back. Michael, you were jumping in, and was somebody else's voice in there, Johnny, as well?
Johnny's a soprano.
Well, somebody was singing the high. I couldn't quite tell who that was.
That would have been me doing my best first thing in the morning.
Doing his Prince.
Yeah, Marianne Knight was the. Lead vocalist there, doing the tune Crooked Jack.
Sorry, Jack.
Right. Yeah. Celtic Crossroads, I'm reading a part of from your website here, and somebody did a nice job of writing marketing copy. As the thunder starts to take hold, rhythms beating Irish dancers, defying laws of speed and gravity, musicians swapping instruments before your eyes, building and rising from a slow groove to a climactic, well, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah. that makes it sound like quite a show. And of course, I'm just sitting watching you guys in sweatshirts and t-shirts. And it's all, we're all just acoustic right in here. But you're going to be somewhat plugged in during the show tonight, right?
Yeah, well, I mean, we're plugged in, but it's still very much, it's pretty old school in a lot of ways. There's not a lot of processing, you know, going on. It's all old school instruments with no synthesizers. One of the few shows left that doesn't use backing tracks or anything like that. It's old school, but it's plugged in, just using microphones.
And you'll have a drum kit as well. We don't have that with us or not.
No drum kit.
Dermal's our drum kit.
Dermal's our percussionist. He plays. Stuff like the cajon and. Well, Dermot will tell you there.
Yeah, what is the cajon? I saw that listed.
The cajon is it's actually a Latin American instrument that has been taken into the Irish tradition in the last number of years, and it's very popular. And because you can emulate the sounds of a drum kit without actually having to take a whole drum kit everywhere with you, it's a very kind of wide-ranging percussion instrument.
So that's a lot of that goes on in Irish music, where you're taking in instruments and styles from other traditions, and that's part of the point of your show, right?
That is true. Yeah.
Especially nowadays, there's a lot of Irish music. There's a lot of kind of fusion going on at the moment. You know, recently, kind of taking Irish music and fusing it with different styles, kind of funky styles or kind of
bluesy stuff. There's a lot of Irish music now with especially in the singing styles, you know, you've got traditional Irish songs that are now almost sounding like American folk songs or, you know, Scottish folk songs. There's a lot of that crossover as well. And, you know, a lot of the, Isaac will know this, a lot of the musicians, I suppose, in America, like Eileen Ivers, Cherish the Ladies, like they are, I suppose, Irish Americans, but they're playing stuff that Irish people would only imagine sometimes. They'd love to be playing like that. So, the crossover is huge, and I suppose we're only thankful that our ancestors came here so that we got a bit of the culture of America as well. So we bring a lot of that into the show, because I suppose we have to remember a lot of audiences that we play in front of maybe are not familiar with the culture of Ireland. I mean, in comparison to America, we're only really a dot on the map, Ireland, you know, the size of it. So by, I suppose, fusing all of these styles, we're hoping to invite a larger audience to sit in seats and hopefully then realise, you know, that Irish music is a great thing, and hopefully that they might want to go out then and play it themselves or at least get a teacher.
Well, yeah, you know, there seems to be a lot of people who've shown up on this program who are picking up traditional instruments, yeah. whether Irish or otherwise. And I've been sort of amazed by the number of young people who are doing that. Mm. And it seems really refreshing.
Well, we're getting a lot of young people at the shows, and all the feedback is really positive, which is great to hear, because for a long time in Ireland, Irish music, I suppose any nation's culture, sometimes it was, for a long time, as Johnny mentioned, like stemming from years ago, it was almost, you know, it wasn't the coolest thing that you could have done as a teenager. But now that's kind of done a full circle, and the amount of young people playing Irish music in Ireland is growing, you know, every day, and even now in America as well. When we hear that feedback from young people here, it's even better, because it means that our culture will never be lost now that the younger people are so interested in it and want to keep it going.
So it's kind of hip to do traditional in
yeah,
Ireland right about
we're very
now.
Cool people.
Yeah, well, yeah, I mean, you look like it to me, yeah, very, yeah.
So, I mean if you walk down the streets in Galway, where this group is from, I mean, Irish music is almost mainstream. Mm. I mean, there'd be more trad music bars than there would any other kind of bar in Galway, really.
It's great, like, because people are making nice livings out of it as well, which is lovely to do something and work at something that you're so passionate about. So, yeah,
well, let's hear, what's our next passionate tune?
Fleur, with a French name.
Yep. This is a good example of a kind of a mixed genre kind of number. This is a few different styles. The first number is a French-Canadian number, and they're going into some Irish polkas and an Irish reel in the end.
Thank you.
We heard a set of tunes in order, a French-Canadian tune, some Irish polkas, and an Irish reel, played for us live in our studio by the seven musicians of the show Celtic Crossroads. The program was first broadcast on Live and Local on March 25th as a preview of their performance that evening at the Doudna Fine Arts Center at Eastern Illinois University in Charleston. Up next, a rebroadcast of my interview last February with mezzo-soprano Frederica von Stade.
Life has enough drama.
And a ring in my navel is a thing of beauty.
Oh, you go look for a job with rings in your nose and your ears and your belly button, and they're going to think parking lot attendant.
And reality.
No, no, there were allegations made about me and various women and the groping and so forth.
I see.
Yeah, anything right. That I did that was wrong, I want to know about it first.
All right, well.
Why not escape for a while this weekend?
Saturday afternoon at 5 on WILL FM 90.9.
Support for WILL comes from World Harvest International and Gourmet Foods on the corner of 6th and University in Champaign, providing Champaign-Urbana with a wide array of foods from around the world, including cheeses, olives, spices, hot sauces, olive oils, and more. World Harvest invites you to join them in supporting public radio.
This is Live and Local. I'm Kevin Kelly. Part 3 of today's show was originally heard on February 10th, the day before the delightful American mezzo-soprano Frederica von Stade kicked off her so-called farewell tour at the Krannert Center in Urbana. If you heard it the first time, I'm sure you won't mind hearing it again. And if you didn't, well, I think you're in for a treat. What made you decide to retire?
I think that, you know, there's a wonderful line, the time has come, the walrus said, to think of other things. And that's pretty much where I am. And I'm got a lot of projects going in the future, which I'm looking forward to. The big top of the list would be that my oldest daughter is having a baby. So I have kind of a little bit of a next career cut out in helping her because she has to work. And I've also been working lately in the last couple of years with a school here in Oakland called the St. Martin de Porres School, and have helped begin a little choir, and I'm hoping to add more and more and more musical and theater programs to the school, and really enjoying it. And to say I'm retiring means I'm doing a retiring tour, but I really have been asked to sing even into the next year and a half, and I won't turn anybody down. I just feel that the kind of purpose of retiring is to acknowledge that you know you're old and have been around for a while, and if anybody wants to hear you, all the better. I'm available and loving to do it, but that, you know, you're not really pushing to build a career.
So does that mean you'll still do the occasional operatic performance?
Oh, I don't know if I'll do operatic. I do have the final opera I'm doing is Dead Man Walking in 2011 in Houston, the part of the mother. And I don't, if I'm asked to do something funny or silly or that I feel I can do, I'd love to. I don't want to start a career singing, you know, small roles because I like to be home and the operatic, you know, committing to an operatic run is a lot, probably more time than I'd be interested in. But I'm up for kind of all kinds of things. As long as people still ask me to sing, I'm delighted to oblige to the best of my abilities.
Were you involved in this particular opera from the ground up, or?
Yes, yeah, very much so. Jake actually worked at the San Francisco Opera in the press department, and that's how I first knew him. And one day he showed me some of his folk song arrangements of songs, and I was blown away and passed them on to some other colleagues who were equally blown away. And on the basis of a vote of confidence by wonderful Lotfi Mansouri, who was head of the company then, he decided to ask Jake to write an opera, and it was Terrence's idea to do Dead Man Walking, and it just had this extraordinary success. Susan Graham was the lead, and I played the part of the mother.
So is it's fair to say then that the role of the mother was kind of created for you?
It was a little bit. It's more prominent in the opera than it was even in the book. And what was amazing for me was to play this woman who really, a mother's nightmare is to not lose control of your child, but to know that they are going down a path that you can't change for them, that will lead them to destruction, you know, personal destruction. And what is worse than knowing your child is going to die and knowing that they have done this terrible, terrible deed, and that, you know, part of it is your responsibility for mistakes that you've made, things that you have not been able to shield them from or protect them from.
And you have how many kids yourself?
I have two girls.
Both girls. And yeah. I imagine in doing this role, you probably did some of your own imagining, you know, what
absolutely.
Would that be like?
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, and there's I haven't met a mother. I'm sure there are some, but that haven't made terrible mistakes that have hurt their children. And you, in performing this role, I really got to explore that in a very, very intense way.
Friederike von Stade talking about the opera music by Jake Heggie and text by Terrence McNally, Dead Man Walking, with which she was intimately involved. And we'll hear a bit about shortly about the notion of creating a role. First, however, on Live and Local, here is Friederike von Stade in another American opera, Samuel Barber's Vanessa, and this is Must the Winter Come So Soon? That was mezzo-soprano Friederike von Stade and the late tenor Jerry Hadley singing Only Make Believe from Jerome Kern's groundbreaking musical Showboat. My telephone interview with Ms. von Stade was first heard on Live and Local on February 10th, the day before she brought her farewell recital tour to the Krannert Center in Urbana. I attended that recital and got a chance to meet her briefly afterward. I was so pleased to hear that she had enjoyed our conversation, and I certainly hope you did as well. I'm always glad to know what you think of Live and Local. You can write to me directly or send your calendar items to willcalendar@illinois.edu.
This is Jason Hayes in for Kevin Kelly, taking a look at the events calendar for Wednesday, July 28th, 2010. The Irish Traditional Music Session will be at Bentley's Pub in Champaign at 7 p.m. At the Great Impasta in Urbana, Donnie Heitler will play jazz piano at 6 p.m., Caleb Cook will be performing at the Rose Bowl Tavern in Urbana at 9 p.m. Joni Dreyer and Dave Cooper will perform at Senator's Pub in Champaign at 7:30 p.m. until 10:30 p.m. Jesus Christ Superstar will be at the Muni in Springfield at 8:30 p.m. Annie will be presented at the Little Theater in Sullivan at 2 p.m. and at 8 p.m. The Illinois Shakespeare Festival is presenting The Tempest at Ewing Manor in Bloomington at 7:30 p.m., and the Chip Stevens Trio will perform at the Iron Post in Urbana tonight at 7 p.m.